One, I'm Harold Fisher. Tomorrow is Diabetes Alert Day. Tonight, on this Medical Monday, we're taking a closer look at type 2 diabetes. My guest is Dr. Griffin Rogers, director of the National Institute of Diabetes, Digestive, and Kidney Diseases. Lines are open. We're taking your questions tonight at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Vincent calling from College Park. Vincent, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a question. The people that go around and saying they can get you off the insulin and cure the diabetes in 1 week if you go to the event and have dinner and listen to what they say. First of all, is that ethical and does it work? Because first of all, it doesn't seem ethical to me that you can even do that. If you have a way to help people and you're going to make them do something else to get the help, that doesn't sound like you're following the Hippocratic Oath. And so that's my question.
I think you raise a very important point, Vincent. And if you something tells you internally that this sounds too good to be true, it probably is. A question, if you are to attend one of these events, is really to ask the question, how long do you follow these people who are on this diet? And you say it goes away, but have you followed them for a week or for a month or for a year? I mean, what's the long-term follow-up of that?
But what's happening at because he said a week. So what's happening at these seminars? And I use air quotes.
Sure.
When I say that.
Yeah, I've never attended one of these seminars, but like Vincent, I hear this on the radio frequently as well. There are, advertisees on websites and the like. And again, since I don't know the details, I can't tell you precisely what people are informed.
But if they promise a cure, what's your thought about that?
Well, at the present time, we're obviously working on a cure. That's the value of research. At the moment, I'm unaware that any particular diet is going to render someone cured of diabetes in that week that is frequently advertised. Mm-hmm. Now, in contrast, what I can tell you is that for people in whom diet and exercise doesn't work, people in this category who are excessively overweight or even morbidly obese, what we do know is that bariatric surgery, which is a form of surgery that restricts the amount of food that can be absorbed.
Mm-hmm. Weight loss surgery.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. A weight loss surgery. It's actually called weight loss or metabolic surgery, is especially effective in reversing that. In fact, surprisingly, within a week, even before many patients lose any substantial amount of weight, you can see a correction in their blood sugar levels and their other metabolic profiles. And we believe that that's, again, a multifactorial event. It's not only that they're eating less food, but their gastrointestinal tract are now making different types of hormones, which may have a direct effect.
But that's a treatment. That's not a cure. I think, just to make sure that we're clear, that, yes, diabetes can be treated with bariatric surgery, can be treated with insulin, correct, but treated so that it can be managed. But as far as completely eliminating, if you don't do these things, you could go right back.
You can, but at least the early evidence for some of these forms of bariatric surgery, actually, not only do you begin to see a reversal or a normalization of blood sugar values, but even those fasting and postprandial glucose mm-hmm. are completely normalized. We don't know, again, the long-term benefits, but if we're going to use the word cure, mm-hmm. what I would say is that goes closer to what we consider to be a cure than a one-week particular diet.
Stay away from those snake oil salesmen, Vincent. I think that's the thing. Thank you so much for calling 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kim, calling from Lorton, Virginia. Kim, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Sure. I have a question. Both my parents actually have diabetes. Well, my mom died from complications of diabetes, and I actually was diagnosed with diabetes 3 years ago. My problem is this. I have never been obese. I've never been overweight. Now that I've been suffering with diabetes and I am insulin dependent, actually I take two different insulins, I have had the problem of not being able to gain weight. I'm actually 53 years old and 96 pounds. Mm. And I don't know what it is that I can do to gain weight. I've tried everything. I don't really have much of an appetite most of the time. Is there any suggestions of what I could do to get my appetite up or try to gain some weight?
Mm-hmm. Have you obviously, I would assume you've discussed this with your physician about your problem with gaining weight and especially relative to your insulin. Are your insulin requirements increasing over time?
They increase over time. Mm-hmm. They increase one, decrease the other. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just been a game of trying to get the numbers right in regards to how much insulin I should take, how many times I should take it. And I've been dealing with this for the past 3 years.
Yeah. Let me give you the, you know, again, there are certain categories of diabetes that I think we should point out that not everyone that has classic type 2 diabetes will have the same type of onset, will respond the same way to various medications, or may develop the same types of complications. For example, there is a website called clinicaltrials.gov that you can go online. Type in under a search feature type 2 diabetes, weight loss, some other elements, and it will actually tell you about ongoing clinical studies, both federally sponsored as well as private industry sponsored trial. And the value of that is that you can actually go and get contact information of people who can give you more details about your particular circumstance. So I would definitely want you to follow up on that.
Okay. Kim, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. India, calling from Northeast. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. Good evening. My situation was I had Cushing's. And my Cushing's caused me to have uncontrollable diabetes.
What is Cushing's, doctor?
It was a tumor. It's when your body produces high levels of
cortisol. Yes.
Cortisol. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it caused a lot of issues. My blood pressure was out of control, and it caused my insulin to be kind of uncontrollable. I was on diabetes. Mm-hmm. I was on several different diabetic medications, and I was in and out of the hospital when I was going. They were almost getting ready to put me on insulin.
Mm-hmm.
I had since had the tumor removed. It was a tumor in my pituitary gland. I had it removed,
mm-hmm.
and after it was removed, I lost weight. I had gained a lot of weight. I was almost 300, and I was over 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I had lost the weight, and my stomach had gone down. But since the surgery, it has been some years now, several years, the only place that I've gained the weight is in my belly. Again, the belly area.
So India, let me get to your point. What's your specific question for the doctor?
The question is, I was just wondering if I was resistant, if I had the, I take my A1C levels and they come back normal, but I never did the 2-hour glucose test, and I was wondering, would I get a different result if I did that other than the A1C? Because I get the A1C and it says everything is okay.
Well, let's see what the doctor has to say about that. Go right ahead.
Yeah,
doctor,
traditionally the way to diagnose either diabetes or prediabetes would have been that fasting and or combination of the 2-hour glucose tolerance test. But the American Diabetes Association, in looking at the numbers, this hemoglobin A1C is a specific test which, instead of just looking at the spot blood sugar level, it gives you your average blood sugar level in the preceding 3 months. And so in certain instances, that's a very good indicator of your control if you actually have diabetes. But more recently, they've actually used this test to both diagnose pre-diabetes or diabetes in individuals. And so unless there's other factors that I'm unaware of, if that value is where they want it to be, then I think you're in good shape. There's probably no reason. Now, obviously, you have to continue to be followed, you know, for your Cushing's disease, which I imagine your endocrinologist is following you for that as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for your phone call. We appreciate it. And certainly we wish you all the best of health. Let me go to another phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Michelle calling from Northwest. Michelle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
I would like to know if taking medication can cause type 2 diabetes. I have been taking tamoxifen for breast cancer for 5 years. Is there a correlation between tamoxifen and type 2 diabetes?
I'm unaware of a specific correlation. There are some medications, and actually the last caller mentioned the fact that she had Cushing's disease, in which the body is making extra cortisol, and a number of drugs that contain cortisol or cortisone or prednisone is certainly one medication that can raise the blood sugar levels. But tamoxifen, and there are several other classes of drugs, I'm unaware of a specific association.
Okay. Michelle, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about type 2 diabetes tonight. Alfred calling from Baltimore. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening. I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes in January after being pre-diabetic about a year ago. I want to know, can it be reversed?
So we're currently pre-diabetes, let me just start off, because that was something that Harold asked before. The results of the studies that our institute funded, as well as co-funding by others, have clearly indicated that if you had pre-diabetes, modest weight loss, if you're overweight, of 5 or 7%, which is accompanied by exercise of about 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, and a reduction in your calorie intake can prevent or delay the onset of type 2 diabetes by as much as 60%. If you're in a very early stage of diabetes, there are some indication that, in fact, there could be some reversal and a restoration of what's called beta cell function, the cells inside of your pancreas that are producing insulin. But it depends. It depends upon a number of factors. But there is. But unfortunately, the longer you have diabetes, the more of these beta cells that begin to not function properly. At least at the present time, that process is slow, and inexorably you lose that function. But early on, and that's why we have some studies now to both prevent the adoption of type 2 diabetes from pre-diabetes, and even in early onset diabetes. There are some ongoing studies called some that we're funding. One is called RISE, which stands for Restoring Insulin Secretion. We're also looking at what's the next best drug to use after people are treated with metformin, and what might actually preserve beta cell function. So there is a possibility there.
Alfred, thank you so much for your phone call. Need to take a break. When we come back, more about type 2 diabetes. And, of course, for those of you interested in taking that 10-question test, you can find it online at NIDDK.NIH.gov. That's NIDDK.NIH.gov. And, of course, we will be posting that on WHUR.com after the program. We'll be back in just a moment.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about Diabetes Alert Day. That's tomorrow. And on this Medical Monday tonight, we are talking about type 2 diabetes with Dr. Griffin Rogers, who is the director of the National Institute of Diabetes, Digestive and Kidney Diseases. We still have lines open if you want to give us a call. If you have a question about it, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to go back to something that you mentioned earlier in the program. You mentioned pregnancy and the impact that diabetes can have on that. What are the risks and dangers of a diabetic pregnancy?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the diabetic pregnancy, and again, so-called gestational diabetes affects somewhere between 7 to 9% of all pregnancies. The infants are generally of a woman who is diabetic during pregnancy. Those infants tend to be larger than gestational size. They tend to have problems during the delivery, which can lead to complications. What we now know, actually, is that the intrauterine environment of these women that have diabetes sets them up in a process that infant is more likely to go on to develop obesity or to develop type 2 diabetes sometimes in their lifetime in comparison to a sibling that they may have had when the mother was not diabetic. And what happens is if you have a mother who gives birth to a girl during an episode of gestational diabetes, that girl will have a higher risk and more likely develop diabetes at an earlier age. And now you can see a vicious cycle actually starting.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so important to have some form of interdiction early on. And in fact, women with gestational diabetes, they are ones who benefited greatly from that study that we talked about earlier, the diabetes prevention program,
mm-hmm.
in which a lifestyle intervention actually improved their risk, not only diminished their risk for going on to develop diabetes, but current studies are underway to see whether we can diminish some of this excessive weight gain during pregnancy or immediately after pregnancy, which may put women at greater risk of developing gestational diabetes during their next pregnancy.
Does diabetes have a feel if someone is diabetic, even if they've not been diagnosed?
Mm-hmm.
What's going on in your body? Do you feel differently from when you perhaps were not diabetic?
There are some symptoms associated with diabetes, but oftentimes people may not have symptoms or they may ignore those symptoms.
What would be
because
those symptoms?
Of the high sugar levels, people tend to be excessively thirsty. They tend to urinate more frequently than usual. They tend to have blurred vision. They tend to lose weight without trying to lose weight. Depending upon how long they have this, they could then, assuming that they not sort of bring to the attention to their doctor these symptoms, they can start to actually develop symptoms of numbness in their fingers and toes. They're certainly at high risk of having cardiac disease, and so having symptoms referable to the cardiovascular system is another. But the more common symptoms are what I mentioned before, being excessively thirsty, urinating more frequently, having blurred vision, or losing weight without trying.
Mentioning, you were just talking about numbness in fingers and toes, and we've often seen one could say hallmarks of diabetes. You know, some of our older folks have had toes and some of their extremities amputated. Why does that happen?
Mm-hmm. Because diabetes affects the small blood vessels that provides nourishment to the extremities. And so diabetes is the leading cause of non-traumatic amputation of those limbs that you just described, often with gangrene initially of the toes, but then it can likely progress further up, involve the ankle, and then below the knee, and then the above the knee. not only does it affect the small blood vessels that provides nourishment to the extremities, but it can also affect the nerve tissues in a way that people may not feel pain or sense pain. And so if, for example, you have very poor blood supply, you can't feel pain, you walk on something, you cause an injury and a wound, the wound doesn't heal well, it's that combination of an infected wound together with poor vascular supply that can lead to an infection, ultimately resulting in a necessity for amputation.
But I often see these commercials for medications involving something called diabetic nerve pain. What is that?
Yeah, diabetic neuropathy is a condition that affects, unfortunately, some people that have had diabetes. Usually it doesn't occur at the onset. People generally have diabetes for a period of 5 to 10 years before you begin to see these complications such as eye disease, heart disease, kidney disease, for example. But by affecting these small nerves, initially one can have this throbbing and burning and sharp lancinating pain. But the other side, one can actually not feel pain at all, and that's what I mentioned. In instances in which people, you know, can injure an extremity, a lower extremity, a foot, and not sensing it and not taking a good care of looking at it can have an infection there that goes untreated.
Why is diabetes such a problem for black folks?
African Americans, unfortunately, have a higher risk of developing diabetes, about 2 to 2.5-fold greater risk compared to non-Hispanic Caucasians. And not only are they a greater risk of developing the disease, but they are also more likely to develop the complications that we just talked about.
Why?
Why? Again, it's a combination quite likely of the genes and our environment. And by genes, I mean our genetic inheritance. And we now know that there are probably somewhere between 75 or 80 genes as a result of the Human Genome Project. We know that about 75 or 80 or 85 genes or gene regions, which either increases your risk of developing diabetes or actually in certain instances will diminish your risk. And that's why, for example, early on in the show, you mentioned someone who was tall and seemed to be quite thin and healthy. Why does he have diabetes? And you know people, you know, who could be very much overweight, tend to eat whatever they eat. They're not active. Why isn't it that they don't have it? It could be that the genes that they have actually may protect them in certain instances or either predispose them to a greater extent at others.
Earlier, you were talking to one of our callers who was asking about the correct foods, and I know you said you didn't want to so much talk about going on a diet and telling you what you should eat, but is it easier to talk about the kinds of things you should not eat? You know, do you have kind of a list of things that if people cut out that could help them, you know, move away from pre-diabetes or even if they are diabetic, be much more healthy?
Well, when eating, we try to stress sort of a plate, and thinking of a plate, we want to kind of, if you can, have half of that plate with fruits and vegetables. Fresh fruits and vegetables are ideal, but fruits and vegetables for certain. One quarter of the plate, you'd like it to be some lean protein, such as beans or chicken or turkey without the skin. And then the other quarter of the plate, you'd like it to be whole grains or brown rice or whole wheat pasta, for example. Grains are very good, and I think the caller asked a question about oatmeal, because both the fiber content as well as the ability of these grains to improve your satiety so you feel full, so you don't eat that much, really has an important contribution in terms of the prevention.
Now, what about red meat, steaks and the like? Good or bad for the diabetic?
Well, we don't want to say absolutely no, but that's one of the things that you probably would want to eat in moderation. There are many other reasons that People are now beginning to see an association of red meat with certain types of conditions, and particularly if you know those conditions run in your family, it's certainly something that to be considered. The point I was going to get at, it may not necessarily be the beneficial or the effects directly of those types of food, but you know, every time you eat, you dine with 100 trillion friends in the form of the bacteria and microbes that exist inside of your gastrointestinal tract. This combination of these bacteria and other types of viruses and other things, as well as their genome, is something that we call the microbiome. And we know that these microbiome are essential for health, but certain varieties of these microbes may contribute to many of the diseases that we're seeing, including overweight and obesity, a tendency to certain types of cancer. More than half of our immune system exists in our gastrointestinal tract. And so these microbes or the microbiome may predispose to a whole host of autoimmune diseases.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Griffin Rogers, I want to thank you so much for sharing your information with us. And I appreciate you coming in. And for those of you who are interested in taking that test, again, the website is niddk.nih.gov. That's niddk.nih.gov. And as I mentioned, we will be posting that on whur.com. Should be there in about 30 minutes or so. Again, Dr. Rogers, thank you so much.
Harold, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, March 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at Daily Drum WHUR or at H Fisher WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM.